don't be reactive. The way to develop that is to build rhythms into your life and your operating style. That word rhythm is like routines, really, okay? But I find routine a bit too tight, whereas rhythms, you can morph them and they are a constant. And when you feel your life are getting out of control or your leadership or you've got 10 million things going on and you're being asked to make a decision, you just bring it back to that core rhythm and it just allows you to center and be calm.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, everyone, it's Sam here. I'm thrilled to kick off today's episode with a true PM powerhouse. Our guest is a visionary leader who's been shaking up the property management landscape across Australia and New Zealand for more than 20 years now. With a knack for strategic development and execution, she has a track record of driving huge transformational change and delivering impressive results everywhere that she's worked. We're talking about someone who's boosted business value and achieved industry best statistics in operational performance. Today, there's never been a better time to bring back an episode of The Leadership Diaries with what I'm sure will be some game-changing insights from Bell Properties, Cathy Crampton. So, Cathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so you're back at Bell now. So let's talk about that first. How does it feel to be back where you started from?
Interestingly, two things. I actually feel like I've never left. It's the most incredible company now. It's grown so extensively. The people are gorgeous. I've been very well supported to the transition back into the group. And interestingly, back in the early days of my career, I always believed you never went back. And so when this opportunity arose, you know, I probably let go of all that ego these days and I'm just more comfortable just to do work that I find interesting with people that I really like. And it just ticked those boxes. And honestly, it feels great. I'm loving reconnecting. I'm loving meeting the new people and excited to help them make a difference.
So you're calling Sydney home at the moment from freezing cold, extreme hot Canberra, yeah. Like the both extremes. How does it feel to be back in the big smoke, if you like?
I was very concerned about driving on the Sydney roads. That's actually not been a problem. Parking's a challenge. I've already committed to changing my car over to something smaller that zips into every little spot known to man. But you know what? It's actually not too bad. You just operate a little bit differently. You do your calls in the car the same as we do in any busy city rather than you got a bit more relaxed. But it's fine. It's actually okay. There's plenty of places to shop. If there's anything that's going to send me broke, it'll be that because there's too much available shopping. But no, it's actually not too big a transition. It's a different conversation you have in these bigger cities with principals or even with team members. They're definitely more informed. They're a little bit more sophisticated in the way that they're operating. But there is still the same age-old PM problems. I can still see them in these businesses the same as I've seen them in the other ones that I've been in. So I know together, once we build our further connections, that we'll be able to make a difference for them, even more than what they have.
Yeah, well, I want to dig into that a bit with you today because we do definitely live in interesting times. But the last time you and I caught up was at ARIC where we were both speaking and I was quietly in the corner having a heart attack. And you just looked as cool as a cucumber. So obviously you're a regular customer on the speaking circuit and things like that. Like, what's your secret to staying calm in situations like that? And also, like, what are people really wanting to hear from you at the moment?
Okay, so there's a couple of things. First of all, the approach to it. I think this, I picked this up from Josh Fegan, to be honest. I just have a routine, the day off. And that involves a bit of exercise. I eat a certain breakfast. I have my tea. I don't get too caught up in what's going on around me and I just take time out before I come in to whatever it is I'm doing. I actually learned that from Fiona Blaney years ago when we were both speaking at an event in WA. So yeah, there's probably just a little routine or a rhythm that I apply. The staying calm or looking cool as a cucumber, trust me, I am very nervous when I do that. I was very nervous about ARIC. You know, it's a big event. It's a big room. It was a lot, but I just inwardly, it's like going to board meetings. It's like going and meeting new principals who've got big businesses, and I tell myself I know what I'm doing. I walk into the environment having done as much homework as I can do. I tend to wear a certain uniform. I don't know if that's obvious. I have a certain wardrobe that gets plucked out for certain things. But mainly it is just centering yourself and managing your energy inwardly. You're like knowing where you need to sit in order to have a clear head. You don't walk in with hangovers. You don't walk in with that sort of stuff. You kind of just bring your nervousness back down, because like everybody else, I have a level of anxiety around lots of things, and I'm just learned to recognize it and just acknowledge it and then just recenter, and then I go in and do it. And you know what the key is ultimately, Sam, is you got to love what you do, you know, and I love it. So even when I'm nervous and I get up there and I forget half the things I'm going to say and whatever, I just talk about what I know because I believe it. And in terms of what people want to hear now, mostly I'm invited and asked to talk around the way that I might operate a business or the way that I might recommend transformation is done. And thirdly, digging under the hood of property management and helping people understand, well, these are your key levers. It's not a complicated business. You control these levers and you'll control your outcomes. And a little bit of people piece in there, you know, around rhythms and optimizing how your people feel and how they're performing. My true strength is probably around that, and also around that capacity conversation and optimizing the returns. So I'm really P&L and people. That's where I tend to speak at now.
Yeah, interesting and good advice. I might take some of that on myself.
And don't worry about it. The fact you can even step up there and speak at those events is, it's a win in itself. Like lots of people don't do it, can't do it, think it's completely overwhelming. I would just forget about the fact you're there. You stand up there, you pick out four or five key people, you just kind of stay engaged with them. I even walk into rooms and go and introduce myself to people and say, you know, I might pick on you and ask your name. And then they tend to give you a little bit more when you're up there. You know, they're a bit sort of open to you, give you a bit of reassurance. But it's nerve-wracking.
So another area of interest of mine is a little bird told me that you've been experimenting a little bit with AI, sort of well into. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been up to?
Thank you. I don't consider myself well-versed in AI. I actually learned it from you. But I have rolled out a couple of pieces of AI previously, that being Topic. We also did look at Rita. We used it in property management, both to qualify leads as well as to qualify repairs and maintenance, because my big thing was I want to be able to use it to obviously create growth, but also to minimize the amount that my business is spending on something we make no money from, which is repairs and maintenance. And that's a real dead space in every business. You know, the PMs these days are spending all their time in it, but actually it's very hard to get a return. So I wanted it in there qualifying, let's call it the low dollar productive aspects of repairs and maintenance. So, you know, somebody's reported a blocked toilet or the dishwasher's not working. And it's having that initial conversation. And even to the point we had it sending out the work order requests, we had it communicating back to the tenant client. So I loved it, right? I absolutely loved it. I'd like to do more with it. We've also used it in the leasing space. And I know I think this is quite simplistic, but having it write adverts for us, which then we, you know, have a read through and then we use. I even used it recently to communicate a very difficult exit result to a client where the property was actually trashed. So we got the AI, the chatbot, to look at the photographs and then give us an interpretation of how to communicate the result. So yeah, I'm still playing with it. I don't think I'm an expert at it. I think you could do lots more with it as it builds its capability.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's really interesting. How did the client react to what the chatbot had said about, I'm assuming you're talking about ChatGPT or something like that?
Yes, it was Deep AI is the one that we used. Yes, we are. And because the client was overseas, we had to start making decisions. We still had a conversation with them, but they weren't in a position to have the conversation straight away. So we needed to communicate the results in a way that was palatable to the client, but then allowed us to get on with remedying the situation. Actually, it's very key what you put in. And I know you know all of this, but just for the benefits of the audience, it's key what you put in, because it can come out with very flowery or it can come out with very clear. And so we had a couple of cracks at it. The client was quite good about it. it just allowed them, funnily enough, it allowed us to rip the Band-Aid off before we had the real meaningful conversation, which is this is what we recommend we do about it. So we were able to skip straight from emotional reaction to let's get this job fixed. So I think it served a really great purpose for us.
Yeah. And just sort of rewinding back, like it's really interesting what you said then, and it never actually occurred to me till you just said it, is that maintenance is the one dead space, like you know, that people make no money out of. It always seems to be the biggest pain point for
everyone. It's a really difficult.
What is it with that? Do we need to change our pricing models?
Absolutely. It's a tough one, that one. So there's a couple of answers to that. Most businesses, like if you go from West to East Coast in Australia, you'll find that they charge more on the West Coast than they do on the East Coast for that part of the business. That's just because different models operate. So what I mean by that is WA has a lot of plus charging, you know, this plus, Queensland less so. Okay. So there are people who are getting a return, but the real issue is that everybody, meaning the clients, expect everything now from property management businesses. They expect us to be able to fix every myriad of problem and know every sort of aspect of things. And we just don't, unfortunately. So in terms of the modeling, I think the more we consolidate rent roles, the more we specialize the task delivery and the task management, the more we'll be able to charge because we'll be able to engage specialists in those spaces. There are beautiful property management people out there who actually love sitting in repairs and maintenance. It's probably not my burning desire. I like the P&L and the growth, but there are people who love it. So as you scale, as your business gets bigger, specialize it, and then have an overarching account manager who's a communication specialist who's facilitating via whether it's Monday.com or Airtable or even the gorgeous platforms we have to get updates and information using AI to kind of qualify the stuff that doesn't make any money. That's the way we need to go. And if we can't buy them all, then we need to collaborate and create some sort of forms of collectives where we're all contributing. Because the little rent rolls, you know, anything under about $500-$600 now would be difficult to make money.
Actually, that was one of the other questions that I wanted to ask you is, given the rising costs in the industry, what are some of the ways that even the innovative approaches that you've seen, particularly smaller people, like right up to the big people, optimizing their expenses? Macquarie Bank came out with that survey last year, didn't they? And it was kind of a bit of gloom and doom. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, look, I think, and I'm sure Don would affirm this, not much had shifted in 4 years, unfortunately, around what people were doing. We're still having the succession exit conversation. What are we doing about that? A lot of people are sitting at marginal profit, still running at about 16% profit. I ran a rent roll in the GFC, and trust me, you don't want to be under 20. You absolutely don't want to be under 20. And frankly, everything I run sits at 30 to 40. So I think the answers for the little ones, what am I seeing that's innovative? It's got to come down to your software choices. You need to have a piece of software that is automating as much as possible. So PropertyMe is about to bring out its Me Pay for Business. Colmio's got a nice little hybrid payment solution. ALO does something similar. Property Tree, you know, has got gorgeous reporting. I mean, they all have something. And if you look at your business and go, this part's costing me too much money, then you need to look at the platform that's going to solve that problem for you. So the answer for the little businesses is in the technology. And you know, that's the first piece. And the second piece is to scale it as quickly as you can. So even if you build organically to say 250, 200, which you can do in a couple of years, then you might look at a very strategic acquisition. There are ways still to buy, even with these interest rates that are manageable in terms of your repayment. But the quicker you can get to that scale, really the better. There's a lot of JVs. I've seen one company where he's done very good joint ventures with buyer's agents. And look, that's been around for a while, but not many do it well. I think the VA piece is another option, but you need to get them quickly productive. If they're sitting over there and it's taking 12 months, it's not really serving you. So again, you want to look at that very closely. I personally think if I were starting a rent roll today, I would be very careful about my technology platform choice. That would be my vehicle in to make it as effective as possible, as quickly as possible.
I have to ask the question and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but what is your favorite right now?
Oh, every time I say this, I get into trouble from somebody. Look, Can I answer that by saying what problem am I trying to fix right now? So I answer it with that, because I think that way you qualify it. I love them all for different reasons. Okay, so I love ALO for its payment platform. It's got a financial services license. It's instantaneous money, but I'm going to come back and qualify all of that. I love the reporting in Property Tree. I think Property Me is a favorite with our teams because they like how they use it. But I love where Colmio is going as well. I like the hybrid solution. And I think they're building some pretty nice automation. Our property also has some fantastic operating automation, possibly the best that I've seen. So, yeah, I can't pick a favorite. I get into too much trouble for that. But they all, I think, do something great a little bit differently. And I think that's probably the best way to put that. At the moment within the Bell Group, we have several, all of them are actually operating in the Bell Group at the moment. I tell you what, none of them have done as yet, though, and that is marry the CRM component properly with the operating platform component. And the second thing, and I gave this feedback to Macquarie Bank last week, is that when you talk about instantaneous money, which is how I refer to it, which is like a payment solution, they're all actually charging somebody for that. So they're either charging the owner or they're charging the tenant. And in this day and age, and I was open with this with Dom, and they're certainly Macquarie Bank are delving heavily here to their credit. I said, in this day and age, I can send you money, you know, via the OSCO platform and you can get it straight away. That's what we should have in business. So to not provide that, I think, is sort of something that will force consumers to start shopping away from the main banks and shopping for different sort of solutions. And I said to Macquarie, you know, if you want to keep everybody happy, that's what you need to fix. Fix that problem. Make it free. Yeah. Whereas you're catching fees in other capacities.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I think that was something that I was sort of thinking, you know, 15 years ago when I was sort of involved in the rent card business. Yeah. Just such a thankless task. And I remember thinking Tracy Grimshaw is going to chase me out of the car park. Like with a, you know, that was back in those days, but some little neo bank will come up with something, I'm pretty sure.
It is possible. When we had this Macquarie Bank chat, we actually had their product development specialist on the chat too. And it is actually possible to do it. They just need completely open APIs to the trust account platforms, which is where the conversation is at the moment. That's about as technical as I can get. But it's definitely, we have the technology is actually the answer. We can do it. It's everybody giving that sort of permission and wanting to do the development work. But we need instantaneous money. I think that's the biggest problem. I don't see this cost of living challenge and interest rate challenge going away for a lot of clients. A lot of people are forced to sell. It's reducing the size of rent rolls. That's forcing the conversation to get more return per property. So you've got to look at your tech platforms. This is a real business now. And the owners who are perhaps ignoring that aspect of the conversation, the ones I worry about. Now's the time to rip the bloody Band-Aid off and look at it and go, we need this thing running optimally. That's a P&L conversation. So without doing that, I think the businesses need to have a good look at whether they're in the game or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we are here today to do an episode of the Leadership Diaries, which is a series of questions which I've been asking established leaders all over the industry for about 5 years now. And they're kind of rapid fire, and I know you haven't seen them. You may have missed a couple of episodes.
I'm glad you said I haven't been.
Yeah, so other people can learn from your leadership journey. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job was working in a bookstore. It taught me not to read the books while I was working. I was actually fired from that job. And then I was an English teacher at a boarding school. I was teaching students who are about 3 or 4 years younger than me. So it probably taught me to know my stuff. I remember distinctly having to teach some very extraordinarily bright year 12 students all about the Chinese Revolution. I'd never studied it. So I swatted for 5 days and learned all about it. And then I delivered the session. So I think it taught me to be thorough and to be informed and to be open to inviting questions and comments and thinking on my feet. Because these were smart kids, you know, they went on to do extraordinary things. So that was my first full-time job.
I was going to say, this is why they say that you retain more of everything you read when you do it with a lens of teaching someone else.
Oh, is that right? I still remember it, all about Mao Zedong and the old, but it was like 30-something years ago. So, yeah. My first real estate job, I think this is relevant, though, is I was never really meant to work in real estate, bizarrely, but we bought a real estate agency. 8 weeks later, the GFC hit, wiped out about $2 million of our hard-earned cash because we had to pay cash in those days. And I had to pick up my laptop and I walked around and sat in the rental department and all these rentals were running down the road because we just didn't put the client first. So I learned everything about rent rolls from the ground up. I sat in every seat. I learned how to run the money side of the business, built a team, and then I was the BDM to the business as well. So I did it all. And it just taught me, I think I can pull apart every rent roll down to the absolute grassroots and understand it because I was in that situation.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so walk us through your morning routine. Which habits do you think impact your productivity in a positive way the most?
I get up. I actually still eat breakfast, although I think at 55 I need to give breakfast away. And start rationalizing my food. I get up and I still have a lot of breakfast and then I actually go for a walk and then I have a cup of tea and then I hop in the car and go to wherever I'm going. And I try and start my meetings around 9:30. But that morning routine, that morning walk, getting outside, earpods in, I play music. I don't really listen to podcasts that much during my morning walk. And yeah, I try and look at what's around me. So that is my morning routine. And then I go to check bank accounts and emails, and then I kind of go to meetings. But that walk is probably the non-negotiable for me.
Yeah, nice. Describe a mentor who significantly influenced your leadership style and what strategies did you learn from them?
Great. I don't think I have. Mentors are not always active. And what I mean by that is you haven't formally engaged them. I learn a lot from a lot of people. There's three that are springing to mind at the moment. One is Jeff Lucas, who actually runs the agency, who I find extraordinarily strategic and very business centric. So I learn a lot through our various little catch-ups or conversations. I think Peter Hanscom from Bell, and he's not paying me to say that, is a highly strategic leader as well. The way he can very quickly cut through to the core issue or the core matter, doesn't get lost in the fluff. I learned that. And I think Leanne Pilkington is extraordinary for women. I think Sarah Bell's just an extraordinary intellectual talent. So I learned a little bit from all of those people. And I think if I had to pick another mentor, Damien Hackett and Paul Curtin, who I previously worked at Place. I think Paul Curtin's a culture king. You know, he's extraordinary at constantly reinventing. So I've learned a lot around that. He taught me about rhythms. So I operate my life with a lot of rhythms and he's taught me that. Damien is very strategic, very considered and takes a long time to make decisions, but is a very thoughtful leader. So I picked up something from all of them and I think I've incorporated that into how I now operate.
So now I'm going to ask you to pick one leadership trait for success in real estate, just one, and how can you actively develop that?
Don't be reactive. The way to develop that is to build rhythms into your life and your operating style. That word rhythm is like routines, really, okay? But I find routine a bit too tight, whereas rhythms, you can morph them and they are a constant. And when you feel your life are getting out of control or your leadership or you've got 10 million things going on and you're being asked to make a decision, you just bring it back to that core rhythm and it just allows you to center and be calm. So don't be reactive and build rhythms into your operating style.
I like rhythm better than routine too, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Music and routine says to me.
I might have a new word next year. But
Well, speaking of new, this is a new question I've added into the leadership diaries because I think it's important. But how are you adapting your leadership style now to meet the needs of younger generations entering the PM workforce?
I have a number of operating structures. So whether they be property management councils, I invite feedback, I set up little projects and I invite all team members, but particularly that generation, to be a part of that. And I let them get to know me because they do come in with a lot of willingness and want to learn. They just like to have an opinion and a voice, you know, and that's not a bad thing. So that's what I'm finding is working. You do need to keep moving. Like if you don't have an innovative culture, you will struggle to keep that generation. They constantly want to move. My daughter teaches me a lot about that. She's 21. She works 3 days a week in a law firm. And She's doing a double degree, so it goes on forever. But anyway, she's 3.5 years into her 5.5 year degree. And she's already saying to her boss, I want to do legal work now. And now maybe she's a little bit early to it, okay? But I don't tell her that. So, you know, she doesn't, maybe she will listen to this. But she made an appointment, went to the partner, said, I want to do some legal work. And it reminded me, you know, having this conversation on the site, it reminded me how you have to keep innovating, changing, working with them to keep them interested and going forward. It's not about what we think they're ready for. It's about what they demonstrate they have the want for, and we need to morph accordingly. I also think in that, and this is true not just for the young generation, but for all generations, you need to share your data with them, like share your results, share your goals, share your vision, build it with them, show your numbers, profit's not a dirty word, and get them a part of that so that they're connected to it. I think that's really important.
Yeah, great answer. Also on the topic of recruitment, what is your favorite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does it tell you about the person?
What do you like to do outside of work is my favorite question, because I want to get to know them. I want to build a rapport. I want to understand who they are. I want to understand how creative they could be. We don't have all the answers. I actually have very few answers, really. I actually like to ask a lot of people what they think. So I do like to get to know them. If they give me an answer that says, oh, I don't do much, maybe they're a little too static for what I think good property management professionals are. If they give me an answer that talks about things they're interested in, then I think they're going to be more balanced. I think challenges are going to wash off them a little bit more easily. They're not going to take things so personally, and they'll be more open-minded in their approach.
Yeah, I like that. You can't fake what you're interested in outside of work. There's so many things you can fake now with resumes and things like that.
Because I can read a resume and ascertain where their level is pretty quickly. So I'm not really interested in that so much. I might pull apart a few things, but for the most part, I'm interested in who they are and how that we can connect and grow as a team, and can they contribute to the business, and what can we do for them?
Yeah. Let's talk about onboarding. So I'm sure you've got quite a detailed process for onboarding new team members, but how do you use that to effectively communicate the culture that you want to promote within the team?
I think they need to meet as many people in the business as possible that are stakeholders in their world. So I think onboarding for me is an 8-week process. It's certainly not 8 hours. There's a lot of businesses onboard you for one day and then you're sort of floundering around. Yes, I think it helps them understand how decisions are made in the business, because often decisions are not made the way they tell you they're made. They're actually made quite differently. You need to learn that. So meeting people helps you understand that. The second thing is there's going to be lots of things that we invite or they create, you know, meaning our recruits, and they need to know how to get the job done the most effective way. So the more people they can meet, the more feasible that is for them, because we want to empower them. So that's the second thing. And I think thirdly, when we're talking about successful onboarding, keeping those touch points going. Again, this is a rhythm. You know, if I was recruiting a team member, I will never miss that touching point, whether that be to start with, it might be daily, then it might move to weekly, and then it might move to fortnightly. But you mustn't miss that, because it's the way that they will have a conversation with you and you're not shut off.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I love what you said in the beginning there about it's 8 weeks, not 8 hours. I've been through so many onboardings in my career too that has just been, here you go, here's your day, congratulations, off you do.
And be detailed. Like if I'm the, for argument's sake, you know, if I'm the person bringing the recruit in, and I've always challenged my operations managers like this, I'll say, okay, we've done an onboarding for so-and-so at this office. They go, oh yeah, I'm booked in all the appointments. Okay, but what's the onboarding? What are they actually doing in those appointments? Have you actually spoken to each of those people and helped them understand what you want them to show, teach, whatever it is, to the new recruit? Like, detail it. And I kept pushing back until I got a detailed onboarding. And not because it might sound controlling, it's not about that. But the more we can internalize to the person onboarding, meaning, you know, for argument's sake, the team leader, the more we can internalize the team leader, this is how encompassing and supportive and framing we need to be for our new person, then the more successful their stickiness will be.
Yeah, which is really important at the moment too, because we've got people leaving the industry and basically qualified property managers can kind of pick and choose where they want to be, can't they?
Absolutely, they can. The key to a successful, and you know, let's put our business hat on here, the quicker you can get to growing your own babies, the better. Right. Yeah. So you need to have some seasoned professionals. We all need that. That's important, no question. But we need to have a really good process of filtering down the talent, and we need to grow our own babies. So just think of it like a plant, and I've just stuck a seed in and I'm growing a little plant. So I call it growing a babies. The quicker you can get to cadets, the better.
Yeah, great answer. Okay. Just picture I am just stepping up to be a leader, and I've come to you and I've said, Kathy, I've just accepted this leadership position. What are like three things I should do in my first 30 days?
Don't make any decisions. It's the first thing.
Yeah.
Not the first thing, but don't make any big changes. Okay. So get in and learn the landscape. Meet the people. Get to understand who does what, who's who in the zoo. Get to know them. Get to know the business. Learn the technology, because very quickly you're going to be running at a pace as a leader, and the quicker you can put your fingers on things, the better. So get to know the people, learn the technology in the environment, and I think don't make any big decisions, certainly not in the first 30 days. Get ready, write a plan. I know that when I started at Place, previously when I worked at Harcourts, and certainly when I just briefly did a 12-month stint in Canberra, the first thing I did in every environment was write a plan. So I wrote a strategic plan. For example, at Place, we executed that strategic plan in the first 3 years. So you can't write a plan until you get to know the people and work out what's working, what's not, who do I need to help make this successful? Because if you've been employed as a leader in the business, you've probably been told what the owner feels the issues are and what the owner's goals are. That's your job to deliver that. So you do need to have a plan to deliver that, and then you need to get their buy-in to the plan. So you do nothing for the first 30 days other than get to know people, get their buy-in to you because you're going to need their support, and write that plan.
Yeah, amazing. What is a common misconception, do you think, about starting a career in real estate or even property management if you want to sort of specialise? And how do you think newcomers can avoid that pitfall?
I think that the common misconception, particularly maybe not in the last 12 months, but typically, has been that you don't need a lot of skill and that you come in and make a lot of money very quickly. You don't. You have to work hard. You need to build capability. It is a business now, like whether it be sales or property management, it's a business. And the more that you can understand those dynamics and demonstrate value in that regard, the more longevity, sustainability, success you're going to have. So the common misconception is it's somewhat unqualified and instantly you'll make money. Neither of those things are true. You need to be qualified and you need to work hard to make money, and we probably still don't actually make enough. So I think that's the fundamental change, but it's misunderstood that it's a business. It's not sort of flashy, gorgeous cars. Look, there's people that do all of that and we see it all, don't we? Papers are even starting to write it up lately, but it's not all about that. The really good operators are not those necessarily behaving like that. They're truly operating it like a business.
Yeah, for sure. So who are you learning from at the moment? Like what specific books, podcasts, courses are you involved in to improve your real estate and leadership skills?
I reread a book quite often, funnily enough, that Steve Carroll gave me called The First 90 Days. And I need to give it back to Steve when he finishes going to the UK. But that's a book that I highly recommend to any leader stepping, particularly into a new business, or even when the business is changing its landscape. It's a good way to reset yourself about what to do in that first 90 days. The other one that I'm keen to read, but I haven't started yet, is called Splitting the Difference. And I believe it's about negotiating with terrorists, funnily enough. But not that I think that real estate people are terrorists or clients are terrorists, but it teaches you how to create a win-win situation. It's something that my husband actually taught me, which was leave something in it for the next person. You know, like don't negotiate to the death, negotiate to a point that everybody's happy with it. It helps people feel like you've got their interests at heart and that they've had a little win in the journey. It's good for conflict resolution when we're trying to get owners or tenants to sort things out, bond disputes, all that stuff. So they're the two I probably am reading at the moment. I'm a reader, not so much a listener, although I do actually listen to things as well. I listen to Diaries of the CEO. I actually quite like that. I listened to a few there. Following Mark Burris at the moment, I'm quite like his no-nonsense approach to business. So they're probably where I'm living right now.
Yeah, amazing. And he's not too terrible to look at either, can I say?
No, that? No, I didn't think it was terrible at Eric, actually. I did make sure I made that session. But he's also 68 and he does functional exercise. I do remember that.
The thing about Mark Burris I always remember is Maz Farrelly telling me that she put her head on his chest and he smelt really nice.
Oh, really? Yeah. You got to love Maz, don't you? She's the best. You know what, Sam? I really do genuinely learn a lot from everybody. Like I take a little bit from everyone and I think that's an important component. You need to take it, you know, from someone like you're having an interaction, you learn something. And then you might digest it and think, well, how can I apply that? Oh, I like that about that, how that person operates. How can I perhaps incorporate some of that into my operating style or into how I'm connecting with people? And it's really important because I'm often perceived particularly as being a little bit hard, you know, and people don't know really how to often know how to read me. And yet when you peel the layer off, I'm pretty kind of relaxed and whatever. So I'm conscious of that. So I work a lot on how I non-verbally communicate to people so that they don't, so not so intimidated.
We should talk about that offline as well because I think,
yes.
That's the same problem.
It's the problem of the focused person, you know, because we're so in our head that we forget actually we're communicating while we're thinking, you know, we need to be conscious of that. It's one of the reasons why I walk with music and not a podcast. Now, I know lots of people walk a podcast, but I have to give myself a mental break from that because otherwise, you know, I'm too tense. Do you know what I mean? And then I go through the day and it's different. So we're always learning. The thing I didn't mention about being a new leader, the thing that helped me twice is I had a coach. So I had a coach while I was at Place for about 12 months. He was a very strategic coach. So I think that really helped me understand strategic versus operational leadership. And prior to that, back in my McGrath days, I was with a guy called Anthony Meeker, he's a great operator. And when I was promoted into that role, they gave me a small pay rise and they said, but we'd like you to have this coach. And he was a sports psychologist. And he actually, I was obsessed with money and he actually broke that, which was excellent, by the way. Because as a leader, you can't be obsessed with money. You know, it's obviously business got to make money, but you need to take care of, you know, the people and take care of the feeling within the business and the money will come. So he was an excellent coach from my early days in a more sophisticated leadership situation.
Yeah, amazing. So this is my second last question, and it is because you're so into the people and profit side of the business. Let's just say I wanted to make some change in this next financial year because we've just ticked over again.
Sure.
More profitable. What are three immediate things you think I should either do, cut, increase, or otherwise?
First thing I'd do is pull out your P&L and be honest with yourself about what's in there. Know every element or every line item. Know what's sitting in those line items. Dig deep. Strip out excess fat. Leave yourself with a bit of, say, 10 or 15% because you've got to have a bit of love in everything that you do. But strip it back because I don't see these operating challenges disappearing anytime soon. You need to put yourself in a strong position. So know your P&L, know what's going in. The second thing I would be doing is making sure that with your team, you've mapped out a good performance process. Now, I don't mean that you're flogging them. I mean that you're getting under their skin and you're getting to understand what motivates them and you're building your business rhythms around that. So that's kind of what I spoke to at ARIC around the design me, maximize you piece. I think that's very important now. That's a retention piece. And I think the third thing I would be doing is having a look at your capacity within your rent role. Now, what that means is how much more can you be doing in the business if you were to restructure your model? Maybe you're looking at an acquisition. What's happening with your organic growth? You know, is it retiring your churn plus 10%? That's a third piece to look at is your capacity piece. Know what your capacity in the rent role is. Very important.
Yeah, amazing. Well, Kathy, I want to say a huge thank you for coming on here and just openly sharing your knowledge. I mean, there's so much to take away and unpack. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this twice before I write this show notes.
I don't know. Everyone's got something valuable to add, I think. I'm just having fun and liking what I do because I'm liking it. You know, I think I've got another 10 or 15 years. Yeah, I might have to have some Botox in the meantime. But other than that, I think I'm doing okay.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, if there was one final thing or one thing to take away or one thing to do now that you'd like to leave everyone with, what would that be?
Just have fun and enjoy it. I took 4 months off about a year ago when I finished up at Place, and it was the best thing I ever did. Just gave myself a break and took a few overseas holidays and whatever. And it just brought it back to me that what I like about what I do. So you've got to like what you do. Find what you like about it and just have fun. Don't take it all too seriously.
Amazing. Cathy Crampton, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.